They give me a haircut. I just took a haircut yesterday. So he said, so you put a piece of cloth on your clothing, and you don't take the hair out of your clothing. But what if that piece of cloth is shatnez? So the Gemara says that ha'aloa is asa. The pasuk says ha'aloa is asa. The disha is prohibited if you wear a garment that's made from shatnez. But if you have ha'aloa, where there's no disha, it's also prohibited. The Rambam's opinion is that they're not the same. The Shulchan Aruch quotes the Rambam that it's a suffix whether we Chacham Avadi have truth about this. It's a fake and nina. Whether we pass like the Rambam or not, the Rambam says there's a difference between Levisha and Ha'aloh. If a person wears Levisha, he tries on a suit. He knows that the suit has sharpness. He wants to try it on to see if it fits. And if it fits, he's going to buy it. Then he's going to have someone remove the sharpness. So to try it on is Levisha Sheim or Ha'aloh. Just trying it on for size, he's not getting Hanoah. It's not that he's chilly and keeps him warm. It's not that he's walking around undressed and now he's properly dressed. He's in a fitting room, just trying it on to see if it's the right size. So the Rambam's opinion is that the Levisha of Shabbos is prohibited in the Torah, even Ebo Hanoah. But Ha'aloh, the Gemara says, is only Asr. It's Ha'aloh, Sheish Ba'Hanoah. So the Gemara gives an example. Sometimes he'll be walking downtown Manhattan. So you have a store that has two branches, and they want one branch, they sold out, let's say, women's dresses, they sold out a certain size. So they ask someone who works in the store to please bring 20 dresses from the other store. So the fellow's walking on the street, carrying the 20 dresses on his back. So the Gemara says, if it's a chilly day, and he's not wearing a coat, and he's not wearing the dresses, he's carrying the dresses on his back, but it keeps him warm. Or it's too hot outside and he can get a stroke. So he's using the dresses to protect himself from the sun, or to protect himself from the cold, whatever it is. So that's ha'aloh, she'ish ba'aloh. So then the Rambam distinguishes, says ha'aloh, the shatnez is a separate pasuk, just beg a kalam shatnez, la'yaloh lecha. So that's only also the Gemara says if you have yesh ba'aloh. But the lisha is also even if you don't have ha'aloh. Other Rishonim disagree with the Rambam. They say no, that you have to have yesh ba'aloh both by Levisha and by ha'aloh. That's why most Ashkenazim would not be uncomfortable about trying on a suit, even if you know bevadai that they have shatnez, because you're just trying it on. It's Levisha shein ba'aloh, so that would be mut. So by Kalayim, you have the two psukim. The Gemara speaks about the two prohibitions in the Gemara in the beginning of Yevamos. The Gemara talks about Ha'aloha of Shabbos and Levisha. What about by tzitzis? If you have a four-cornered garment, you have a blanket that has four corners. Is it chagrin tzitzis? You say, you only chagrin tzitzis. Allah rakafos kutsashet the hasabon. And the garment that you wear, the overwhelming majority of the Rishonim say that this chidish of Ha'aloha, Allah, in not allowed to wear shatnez, only applies to shatnez, doesn't carry over to tzitzis. One is only obligated to put on tzitzis and a beged that you wear in clothing. But if it's a blanket, it's not chayav tzitzis. But because there was such a minority opinion in the days of the Rishonim, so the Magen Avraham is the standard commentary on the side of the page of the picture of our time. So Magen Avraham came up with this compromise, and many of them recommend to follow like that. There is a dispute in the Tanoim, in the Gemara, in Perakat Chelus, in the Nachas, which begodim are chayim at tzitzis ben ator, which only chayim at the Rabbana, what material is it made from? So, there was an opinion in the days of the Tanoim that only beged of tzemer or beged of pishtim. If you have a garment made from cotton or any other material, silk, whatever, is only chayim at tzitzis ben Rabbana. And the other opinion is not all begotten of chayim and tzitzis, not only in tzemer fish. Halacha l'maaseh there's a machlokes in the Shulchan Aruch and Mechaber Ne'amot. But the sha'aminim, other than tzemer fish, the chayim and tzitzis, the Torah and the Rabbana. So the Magen Avraham has this compromise. He says if you have a blanket that has four corners, if it's made from tzemer, probably not going to be made from fish, not going to be made from linen. But if it's made from tzemer, from wool, a woolen blanket, then you should be machmer. Not to put tzitzis that look ridiculous, but we put tzitzis on a four-cornered blanket, but to round out one of the corners, so it won't be chayav tzitzis. by the mistake of other materials other than separates, and we're not choshish with that opinion. So shiti yechigo, we're only choshish if it's really a negative tzemer, a negative tishin. There is an interesting dispute that the Baal HaTosfot have in Rashbam and Rabbi Natan, the two brothers. Rashbam is the older brother, the Rabbi Natan is the younger. Rashbam learned with Rashi, he always quotes Rashi, and he doesn't like to disagree with Rashi. That was his grandfather, and that was his rebbe. Rabbi Natan feels very, Rabbi Natan was a young child when Rashi passed away, so he found it very easy to disagree with Rashi, not only about Tfilin, Rabbi Natan, but many other things. Every page, whatever there's a Tosfot, Rabbi Tam often disagrees with Rashi. So there's a machlokes between the Rabbi Tam and the Rashbam in the following situation. With respect to Shabbos, we just mentioned before, the Rambam distinguishes, the Rambam understood the Gemara, that the Gemara is distinguishing between the Isa Ladisha and the Isa Ha'amor. The Isa Ladisha is to wear Shabbos, even if it's Levisha She'en Bo Hanor. If you're trying it on, you're not getting Hanor that you're keeping warm. You're just in the room where you try things on. You don't get Hanor that you dress decently. You don't get Hanor that this keeps you warm. You don't get Hanor that protects you from the sun. It's inside just trying it on. So the Rambam's opinion is that Levisha Shabbos is also She'en Bo Hanor. But Allah is only also if you have Hanor. Most of the other Rishonim disagree with the Rambam, and they think that both Levisha and Hahalor is only prohibited by Shabbos, and it's Yesh Bo Hanor. So there is a machlokes and tosfos between the Rashbam and the Rabbi Natan. What about by tzitzis? Let's say it's freezing in the winter time, and there's no steam in the base medrash, and everyone's wearing their jackets with a sweater with a coat, and then they go to Daven Mincha. So the meaning by the Ashkenazim is probably by the Sfaradimos. I don't know that the Chazal wears a talus. They cover that tzibur. You don't wear a talus. Okay. So the shayla of Ashkenazim. Let's say the fellow's wearing a suit and a sweater and a jacket and a coat. He's very warm. He's going to put a talus on top of the coat. He doesn't even feel that he doesn't feel anything changed. He doesn't feel warmer. He doesn't feel anything. Absolutely doesn't feel anything from the talus. Doesn't make him hotter than he was before because he's wearing a coat with a jacket with a sweater and everything. Two sweaters. So the question is, can you say a bracha on such a talus? It's ladisha she'en bo hanor. Absolutely. You don't even sense that you have a talus on. So that's two opinions in Tosfos. Where did they come up to have these two opinions? What raised the issue? It's a Tosfos and brachas by us. Half of the Tosfos is missing. So if you look at the Tosfos of Rosh, he quotes the whole Tosfos. The Gemara has a din that there was a machlokes in the Gemara regarding tzitzis. Is it chayvas mona? Is the obligation to put on tzitzis even if the four corner talus is in the drawer, even if you're not wearing it? Or do you say no? Only gedilin tasel chol abba kampes chus asher techasev mona. You wear it. If I bought a talus and I didn't put it on yet, I'm not afraid to put it on tzitzis. So that's how we pass it. Tzitzis is only chayvas gavra. It's not a chayvas mona when you're sitting in the drawer. Mona mechayvas tzitzis when you wear it. So according to the opinion that tzitzis is a chayvas mona, the shita is not accepted. That you mechayvas to put on tzitzis on the four corner garment even if it's sitting in the drawer. So what do you do with the three words, Hashem Techasebo? Does it imply that it only applies when you're wearing it? So the Gemara says, Hashem Techasebo means, if I have a beggar that's Omer Lilbosh, what if I have a store, I buy wholesale and I sell retail, and I have Tamesim, I don't plan to wear any of these because I'm not going to wear any of these, are crazy colors, I'm not going to wear any of this stuff. I'm going to sell it, I live in Harlem. My story is about I'm going to sell everything to non-Jews. So if you don't plan to wear it, you're not chayvah tzitzis at all. So the Gemara says, let's say a person bought tachrichin. He plans not to live forever. He's planning on dying in the future sometime. When he reaches Marias and Shalom. So he buys tachrichin that have four corners. But he doesn't wear it until after he dies. After he dies, there's some bachshin. he's not going to do any mitzvahs. But right now, if you think that Kloy Kupsa Chayav Mitzitzes, then Godin that is sitting in the drawer, or also Chayav Mitzitzes, what about the Tafrichim that he doesn't plan to wear during his lifetime? He's only going to put it on after he dies. And he more says, you're not Chayav Mitzitzes? Because it says, Hashem Techasevot, you're only going to put on Tzitzes on the pegging. It's Eimid Lelevishim. It's not Eimid Lelevishim, you're not Chayav. So the Gemara says, but then after he actually dies, and they put on, the meaning is that you bury people with the talus. So the Gemara says, when you bury the person with the talus, he shaita, at that time you bury him, you have to put on tzitzis. Why? The din is that neisim chopshim, neisim achotim and mitzvahs. The Gemara says that's a violation of the pasuk loy merosh chayav toseh. If you bury the mace with the four-cornered talus without tzitzis, so it's a design to the mace, you're demonstrating that the mace is not chayav mitzvahs. But not that he bevaz on the mace, and you have to put on tzitzis on the day. Over the years, the minig developed, I don't know by the Sfarim, but the Sfarim minig is the same, but the pasuk with tzitzis. I'm not familiar. But you bury people with the talus that they wore during their lifetime, and you pasuk with tzitzis. It's a question, why? But that's a big discussion in the Rishon. So on the one hand, the Gemara says that when you bury a person, there's a violation of Loi L'Rosh Chayav Toseihu if you bury the mace with a beged that doesn't have tzitzis. What if you bury the mace with Tachrichim that are made from Shatnas? So the Gemara says that's permissible. So all the Rishonim ask, why is there a difference between Shatnas and tzitzis? If you're permitted to bury the mace with shatnas, you're demonstrating that it's not chayav mitzvah any longer. Why is that an isur loy l'rosh? Why are you only worried about burying him with a four-cornered garment without tzitzis? But different suggestions are given by different Tosfos, and I try in different answers are given. So Tosfos quotes a machlokes Rabbi Tam and Rabbi Shvan regarding this issue. So one of the Baal HaTosfos gave the following distinction. The prohibition of shatnas only applies even if you do levisha, not like the Rambam, he said, whether you do levisha or ha'aloha, the Baal HaTosfos didn't agree with the Rambam. The Issur shatnas only if it's levisha sheyesh bo ha'aloha. The mace absolutely doesn't get any ha'aloha by being covered. He doesn't feel warmer, doesn't affect him at all, doesn't feel anything. So since the levisha of the shatnas, when the person is no longer alive, is ebo hanoah, so there's no reason to lie at all. If he would be alive, it would have been mutter. So now that he's dead, there's no violation of loy l'rosh chayav toseh, not being mevazeh. A living person who wears shatnas, and he doesn't get any hanoah from it, is not a violation of the issur hanoah. And not a violation of the issur of shatnas. But to wear a beged for the purpose of mitzvah tzitzis, if you do the levisha, even ain't got hano, it's still chayav tzitzis. So the mace, true, the mace doesn't get any hano from the beged of tzitzis, but it's chayav tzitzis anyway. If he would have been alive, he would have been chayav tzitzis. And you're not going to put tzitzis, that would be a violation of Lo Yerosh Chayav Yosef. And the other Baal HaTosfos, this is my friend, who's been the top of the Rosh Hashanah, the two brothers, the other one says, not true. Just like by Kalayim, the din requires levisha sheyesh bo hano, so do by tzitzis also, if you do levisha sheyesh bo hano, it's not chayav tzitzis. So that's why the Rebbe Sheni gave a different explanation. Why do we distinguish between the shatnas and the tzitzis? So that's really a big question. If a person is wearing a suit with a jacket with two sweaters and a coat, and when he puts on, when the chassan puts on the talus on top of the coat, he doesn't even sense that he's wearing a talus. He doesn't feel nothing because he's so loaded down, because there's no steam in the best medrash. He's wearing a coat with sweaters on him, he doesn't even feel at all that he's wearing it. It's going to say a bracha on the talus. Is it being a kaga mitzvah? That's levisha, she'en bo hanoah. So that's a machlokes, the Rambam and the Rashbam. And today said, as the din at the end of Parshas Shlach, it has the din of tzitzis, and it says you have to put in silk chelus. You have to include a silk chelus. But if chelus is not available, so there's a machloekes satanoim, whether chelus ma'akevus is a lovon, a lovon ma'akevus a chelus. Let's say you made the strings, they're all chelus. All the strings are chelus, so none of the strings are any chelus. You only have lovon, you don't have any chelus. So that's a machloekin sataraim, but the tremis, not tremis, and sababa, and lava, not tremis, and tremis. How do we pass in aloha and maisa? So he's again a machloekin sarishonim. Then his rachi halevi, there's his commentary on the bottom of the rift. In Masech HaShabbos, in Perek Mamem Adlikin, writes that he feels we should pass on like that Tana, Tchelus and Atenus and Salova. And the Rambam and the Mohammed writes, we heard about the Balamor, and he never wants it. Because we don't, in the days of the Balamor, they didn't have any Tchelus available. And he passed on Aloha, Tchelus and Atenus and Salova. This Machloik is, by the way, when the Tchelus and Atenus and Salova, it's only machlokes hatanoim with the machlokes rishonim by tzitzis by big dekuhune. Some of the big dekuhune require tchelus. So there would appear from the Tosefta that everybody agrees that tchelus is miyakim. You don't have tchelus in the big dekuhune that is supposed to have tchelus. The begodim are not kosher for to do avodah. This is what motivated them was that Razina Rebbe in the late 1800s. He felt that we had to show HaKadosh Baruch Hu that we're interested in rebuilding the Beis HaMikdash. We'll take the first step forward to show that we're preparing to build the Beis HaMikdash and bring Kabbalah, then HaKadosh Baruch Hu will help us. But if we don't even take the first step, so why should he help us out? So he felt, since Tchelus Na'kevus, we have to figure out what the Chavozin is and what the Tchelus is. And he specially traveled. He was a genius, Razina Rebbe. So he specially traveled to Italy. He heard that there was a big aquarium there. And he looked to find out what sea animals they have in the Mediterranean that could possibly be the chilozim. And he came up with whatever he thought that is the squidfish, because it spits out a certain color dye. And he had made a factory in Razin. And they were processing what he considered was the chilozim. And at the beginning of the Second World War, there were tens of thousands of Jews, not only Razina Hasid. Razin wasn't such a big Hasid, but many other Hasid were there this time of also. There were many people, tens of thousands of Jews, who were wearing Razina Tremas. Chief Rabbi Herzog, before he was appointed Chief Rabbi, went to university, I think in Ireland, and he wrote his doctoral dissertation on trying to ascertain which is the chilos and what sea animal does the chilos come from. So he was the one who came up with the Finnish that he thinks the word chilosum means a shelled fish. It means a shell snail. It doesn't mean a fish, not a regular fish. And they always assumed that it's some kind of a fish. And there was a discussion in the Levi Yehuda, in the Chibas Levi Yehuda, whether the chilozin has to be a kosher fish or not necessarily so. Usually we have it in the huchshu, the malach shamayim, alor, behem, etor, belvai. The Gemara talks about the tachash for the building, for the purpose of building the Mishkan, you have to have oris kosher. You have to have the hide from the tachash animal. So the Gemara says the tachash doesn't exist anymore today. It was only an animal that existed in the days of Moshe Rabbein. We don't have it anymore. So the Gemara raises the question, was it a kosher animal? It's not too relevant. We're not going to make another mission with Torah's caution. The Gemara says it has to be Or Behem Torah, but we have a tradition of Hufshul and Rach HaShamayim and Or Behem Torah Belvan. So there's a big machlokes in Rishonim whether Hufshul and Rach HaShamayim. Rach HaShamayim means Tashmish Kiddusha or even Tashmish Mitzvah. Let's say a shofar from a Behemoth Meir. Shofar is a tashmish mitzvah. The Gemara talks about the batim and the ritzuis of the tefillin have to be or behem Torah because of this. The tachash is part of the mishkan. That's tashmish kedusha. The batim and the ritzuis of the tefillin are tashmish kedusha. But if you have, let's say, a shofar from a behem tmeiyah, shofar is only tashmish mitzvah. It's not tashmish kedusha. The Gemara distinguishes. The Gemara says that two. All the religious articles that we use for the purpose of fulfilling mitzvah are divided into two categories. Some of them have kedusha and some of them don't have kedusha. The difference is, let's say, what do you do with the esrim and the lulav if the sukkah is over? So you throw it in the garbage, you don't put it in shemus. What do you do if you have an old talus and somebody buys you a new talus? So what do you do with the old talus? You donate it to the shul. The old talus is so old The guy buying the shul doesn't want to take it. So if I give it to a poor man in the neighborhood, the poor man doesn't want it either. It's all worn out. He wants a good talus. I have a talus I used to wear for years, and no one wants to wear it anymore. So strictly speaking, the Gemara said, you throw it in the garbage. You don't have to take off the chutzit tzitzis and put it in the shemus. You throw it in the garbage. It says you shouldn't throw it in the garbage with the dirty diapers and with the chicken bones. Put it in a separate day, and then you throw it in the garbage. But tashmishi mitzvah on his rock, and after this man on mitzvah is up, tashmishi kedusha, I think he knows it. If it's tashmishi kedusha, that has kedusha, like mitzvahs, abatim, or it's kashim, that has kedusha, that's tashmishi kedusha, after this man is up. Is nignosim, you have to put it in shameless. So that's a suffix in the Ran, in my seventh Rosh Hashanah, if you have a shofar from a behemoth tmeo, is that acceptable or not? Because a shofar, if you have an old shofar that broke, you throw it in the garbage. You don't have to put it in shameless. It's tashmisha mitzvah, it's not tashmisha mitzvah. So maybe this klal, the hukshuru, the melech shamayim, or behemoth tarmul vad, maybe it only applies to tashmisha kedusha. Let's say when you do chalitza, someone is married and dies and leaves no children, no descendants, and he has a living brother, said his wife is not permitted to be married until she has chalitza. You have to have a leather shoe that the brother should wear on his right foot, if he's right-footed, if the right foot is stronger than the left foot, and the Yevam has to take off the shoe. So the Tosfos quotes that in the Tav, the Perek Mitzvos Chalitza, that the leather shoe has to be from the Or Behemah Tahara. Why does it have to be Or Behemah Tahara? So the Mefarshim explained, because it's a Tashmisha Mitzvah. It doesn't have Kedusha. The Chalitza Shul doesn't have Kedusha. But you're going to use it to fulfill the Mitzvah. So the Rabbi Tam apparently thinks the Tashmisha Mitzvah also we apply the word Moshe and Lach HaShemah. So that's a question. Should we assume that the Chilozom, which we use to get the dye for the trailers, the chilozon has to be a kosher fish, or not necessarily so? So there are two parts to the question. One part is the tzitz is only tashmish and mitzvah, it's not tashmish and kusha. The other part of the question is that you're not really using the fish itself, you're using the dye from the fish to get absorbed in the strings. So that's a discussion in the Gemara about the Kana of all places, whether chazusa nilsehi or chazusa la nilsehi. When you have a jacket that has dye in it, do we consider the dye as if it's the end? We say no, it's absorbed in the garment. You don't have the dye is not tangible. It's absorbed in the garment. So it's not considered getting on up. Let's say you dye a beged from a dye that's also unknown, klaya kerem. So do you say chazus and milsi you're getting on up from Why I care by wearing this garment that has the dye on it. So that's a discussion in the Gemara of the Kama. We pass that it says fake in the Dina. So this is what the Nabi Yehuda and the son of the Nabi Yehuda, they wrote a lot about that. Do we have to assume that the chilozon is a kosher fish? So for many years it was assumed that the chilozon is a fish. And now she said there are a few places it's a dog. The Gemara uses the Rosh of dog. So the old thought of dog means a fish. Now, my Herzog wrote his doctoral dissertation on Chelus, so he came up with this fish. He proved that he thinks that the word chilozon means a shell, a worm. That's in a shell, it's not a fish at all. So by definition, it's not kosher. It doesn't have stock in the caskets, it's not a bull fish. So it's interesting historically. My Herzog claimed that when the Radzina Rebbe went to Italy, the Radin Rebbe himself wrote three little sermons on Chelus, and he writes the whole history. He decided that it's a certain fish. And then the Gemara says, when you have Chelus absorbed in a cloth, it's going to be impossible to remove the dye. It's indelible. So every time he would use what he thought was the Chelus, and he dipped some wool in it, and he waited till it dried, and then he would wash it out. Everything would wash out. So by definition, it's not chelus. Then what's it? Chelus holds. So he put an advertisement in the Italian newspaper that he needs a chemist who knows about dyeing things, and he's willing to pay money. So a non-Jewish chemist volunteered for money. So he volunteered to help out the Rebbe. So the Rebbe explained what it is. He wants this color, and it has to be from this fish, and it has to be able to hold in the womb. So the chemist said, no problem, I'll give you a chemical that'll help it to hold in the womb. So that was how the Radzina Rebbe founded his factory in Radzin before the Second World War. And then, as I said, they had tens of thousands of people wearing the Radzina chemist before the Second World War. So Rav Herzog points out that the chemist fooled the Rebbe, that the chemical that he gave him is Prussian blue, I think it's called. The chemical caused the color. All of the dye that he got from the fish was washed out. There was nothing left in the Radzina chemist, nothing left from the fish at all. And all the dye was from the synthetic chemical that the British chemist gave him. So Rav Herzog said that the whole thing was a mistake. So it's interesting, just historically, after the Second World War, the factory was destroyed in Radzin, and the people who used to do the work in the factory were all killed by the Nazis. After the war, the Radzin Hasidim started over again in Eretz, so they wanted to build the factory. The only one alive who knew what the secret was, how the Rebbe made the chelas, was Rabbi Herzog, and he had written about it. That was his doctoral dissertation. So he told them, they asked him, how did they make it? He told them how. But he told them also that the Rebbe was fooled by the God. So that they didn't believe. They didn't accept what he said, the Rebbe can't be. The Rebbe was fooled by the God. So they still have. The Radzina Hasidim had a factory in Eretz Yisrael, the same way they had in Europe. That's exactly the way they're doing it. So they think that the Rebbe was right. They don't want to accept that the Rebbe was wrong. But most assume that the Herzog was right, that the Rebbe was wrong. So they don't exactly use Rabbi Herzog's table seat because he was also given false information about a certain detail. So the table that they use now is based on Rabbi Herzog's dissertation, but towards the end of the book, the last five pages or so, he backs up from what he said because of misinformation, and he comes to the conclusion that it's a purple color. It's not an all blue color. That's kippy. Mark says the color of the trellis is the color of the sky. That sky is not purple. The sky is blue. It's a question of the color of the sky at what time of the day. Rashi writes the color of the sky at midnight. That the word techelus in Chumash comes from the word tichlo. Tichlo means death. And Makas Becharis occurred at midnight. That's how Rashi writes on Parshas Shlach. Makas Becharis started at midnight. It occurred at midnight. So Zecher the Makas Becharis, we have the techelus, which is colored in the sky. That's kimat black. Very, very dark blue. It's kimat black. Rashi, in a few places, right now, the Rambam writes, it's the color. Rashi writes the color of the sky at midnight. And the Rambam writes the color of the sky in the afternoon. It's light blue. It's not dark, dark blue. It's light blue. So that's a question. So the new trailers that they use in Eretz Yisrael, so some people want dafka to use very dark blue, like Rashi. And others use the exact same color. The only question is how much water you dilute it with. If you dilute it with a lot of water, then it'll be light blue. If you don't dilute it so much, then it's going to be dark blue. But it's basically the same color. Just a question how much you dilute it. So Leitchik once gave a shiur on this topic. So he mentioned that in Kabbalah Svarim, there's a discussion where the chelus represents midas adin or midas achesed. So he said, probably should depend on this. If it's supposed to be the color of the sky at midnight, because makas veris, that's midas adin. But if it's supposed to be the color of the sky in the afternoon, when the sun is shining, everything is bright outside, that probably represents Midas Achesed. I remember many years ago, I was in speaking to the OU in California. So somebody came over to me and he asks me, are there any sources in the Talmud with respect to trailers, whether it's poisonous? So I said, why do you ask? Why do you raise the issue? So he told me that he works for the federal government, and there's a law that you're not allowed to put any poison dye into clothing because little children will chew on the sweaters. Some adults will also chew on the sweaters. But the Losh and Yikia says that little children will chew on the clothing and it has poison that can affect them negatively. So that's what he does for a living. He tests clothing for the dye to see if it has poison. So he tested the new trailers that they have in Eretz Yisrael and it has poison in it. So yes, we have any sources. I said, the only thing that comes to mind is this Rashi and Chumash. Rashi says that chemis loshen tichla death, death to the mitzriya, that the makas b'charis occurred at midnight, and it's supposed to be the color of the sky at midnight, zecha la makas b'charis. Maybe it's supposed to be poisonous. That's what he told me. So this was a big machlekes, so the chemis makas b'charis on that. The Baal HaMa'or lived in Provence. He wrote a sefer in the city Lunel. That's in southern France. Lunel means the moon, and he called the name of his sefer HaMor HaKotin. And he gets the Noshim and the Zikin, because the Mishnah says at the end of our Basra that learning the Zikin, Harotsu Sheyachkin, one who wants to become sharp, Yasik the Bini Mamas, he should learn say in the Zikin. The most complicated part of Shas is the Zikin. So the Baal HaMa'or puts it together, Noshim and the Zikin. So he says, the light of the moon is not enough to succeed, to learn the Zikin. You have to have the light of the sun. So when the Baal HaMa'or wrote the Sefer on Noshim and the Zikin, he calls it the Mar HaGodol. And the rest of the Baal HaMa'or, and Moed and Abrach, is called HaMa'or HaKotin. It has a different name for the Sefer. So the Baal HaMa'or, the Ramban writes, he heard the Baal HaMa'or never wore tzitzis because he was up the pin. Chelos makeres alon, so he won't gain anything by wearing the tzitzis. The general accepted opinion is not like the Baal HaMa'or. We say a bracha when we put on tzitzis. We assume that we are here to the mitzvah. We assume that chelos is not makeres alon. However, the Maharam Rutenberg was famous. He was the end of the tkufa of the Baal HaTosfos. Maharam Rutenberg was the Rebbe of the Rosh and the Mordechai and Hagos Maimoni, and he was a Talmud. Marmut was a Talmud of Yerushalayim, who in turn was a Talmud of Rabbi Yisrael Leon, Talmud from the Baal HaTosfos. So it's Yodua that Maharam Rutenberg on Shabbos, when he would wear tzitzis, he wouldn't walk out in the street chutz la'erev. He wouldn't walk chutz la'erev with the tzitzis on. So the different Talmudim write different suggestions why. So some of them write he was afraid that maybe the springs would rip in such a way that they would be puzzled. And the Gemara says that if you wear a puzzle and tzitzis on Shabbos in the street, it's a violation of Hatzor. Even a mechuba lebeged, dina kebeged, and the strings are attached to the beged, that's only mechuba lebeged darka mekach. But let's say a person sews on a handkerchief. He has a cold and he's afraid he's going to sneeze. So he sews on a handkerchief on the inside of his jacket. That's not normal to sew a handkerchief on your jacket. So let's say you have a shop this day. We have the tent of the company who manufactured it. Or you have a hook in the back. Whatever is normal. Whatever is dark of the calf. But if something is b'chubba l'beg, it ain't dark of the calf, then it's not normal to leave it like that. Then it is an Israelite sword. So the Gemara says, if you have chutei tzitzis that are puzzled, you're going to take them off at the earliest opportunity. Then take them off and put on kosher tzitzis for the Torah. Then it's got to be an Israelite sword. So some of the Talmidim of the Maharam Rutenberg suggested that the reason why the Rebbe, the Maharam Rutenberg, would avoid walking chutz la'erev with the tzitzis on, with the talis on, was because it was choshish for the Baal HaMa'or shita. And others wrote the reason why he was afraid to walk chutz la'erev with the tzitzis, he was afraid the tzitzis may tear. These are two totally different explanations. So the Nitziv has a children, someone asked him this, what's the real reason for the Maharam Rutenberg? It's his great-grandfather wasn't born yet. When the Maharam Rutenberg died, how's he going to know? So he thinks you can tell by which of the Talmidim who said what. He said, those who were close to Talmidim, they knew the real reason. The real reason was that it was Koshish for the Baal HaMa'or Shita. Koshish Baal HaMa'or Shita, so all week long he shouldn't have said the bracha. The Sata Mitzitzis, if it's a fake indeed, maybe you don't see anything. And that's what the Nitziv thinks. It was Choshish for Hilchos Shabbos, Hilchos Hatzor on Shabbos is more common than Bracha Lamatov. So Hatzor on Shabbos, he wouldn't wear the tzitzis and the beged. Chutz La'er, he was afraid that it would be an Iser Hatzor. And those Talmidim were not so close, they thought that they never heard from the Rebbe himself what the reason is. So they were guessing, so they thought the reason why is because he was afraid maybe one of the strings would rip easily and it would be in violation of Hatzor. Some have such a practice today also, that they won't wear tzitzis in the street on Shabbos. They will carry over this tradition from the Maharam Rutenberg. How many strings do you have to have of chelos? That's a good question. It's unclear. It's very unclear. So the Rambam's opinion is, there's a machlokes b'sham and b'sil. How many strings they put in? So the Shammai Rabbi opinion put in four long strings, and they called them here, and it turned out to be eight. We follow the Shammai. This is one of the few cases, one of the six cases, of the many disputes between b'sham and b'sil. The Rishonim say, the Siddur of Amram God, he writes, there are six cases when we pass on the Shammai. The Mishnah in the end of the first Perek on Shabbos lists off 18 cases where the Shammai outvoted the Silo, that we pass the life of the Shammai. But then the Gemara says, when the Silo, the Shammai looked around in the basement one day, and most of the Silo were not there. So they took a vote. In Congress, they do this sometimes. The Mishnah is there. If the right people are there, they bring up the issue, they have the majority, so they vote. That's the shtick that they do. So the Shammai did that one. But the rest of the Muslims have a Shabbat process. So the most of the Bishul went up. The next day when he came back, so the rest of the Bishul agreed with the Bishul. So that's not really 18 exceptions to the rule. The Bishul agreed with the Bishul. The day that the vote was taken, the Bishul went in and disagreed. But the next day, they all agreed with the Bishul. But there were six cases where the Bishul did not agree with the Bishul. And Rav Aaron got this one. So this is one of the cases that the Bishul, in the opinion, he take four long strings, told Mavi make eight short strings. And Basil said, no, he take three long strings, he told him only make six. And the Gemara says in Balabasa, the Gemara tells a story that Rabbi Baba Chana was on a vacationing. So they had an Arab tour guide. He was showing the Mason Midbar, the Mason in the days of Moshe Rabbeinu. The Blue Kerach. It's called Blue Kerach. So when he came back to the Bismarck after vacationing, he tells the people that the Arab tour guide showed them the Neis HaMidbar. So he asked them, did you check the sixes to see when it's four long strings that make eight, or six long strings that make six? Find out, what did they do in the Neis HaMidbar? So he said, it didn't occur to him to check the sixes. So he said, idiot, moron! You saw the Neis HaMidbar, you didn't bother to see whether they did like the Shabbat. They said, you're an idiot! What you gave from the whole tour? That's the Gemara's Lashon. Rabbi Baba Hanan is an idiot. That's how you more have much. So we pass in Allah that it's four long strings. He told the Rabbi to make eight. So the Rabbi's opinion is that you dye half of a string. It doesn't mean if they make a string, you twine the strings. If they make it, then you're going to dip it into the dye. That's only going to dye the outside. The inside is going to be white. So you have to dye the wool beforehand, and then when you take the wool and you make it into thread and you make it into a twine, so you make, that's not so easy, not that hard, but you have to know how to do it. You only make half of the string with the blue wool that was dyed when it was wool, and half of the string, use wool that was not dyed. It's done. The writer disagrees with the Rambam and says he do silk trailers, one whole string, not a half of the string, one whole string. So you're going to have two out of eight are going to be dyed blue. Rashi and Tosis in the beginning of the Parahatelus understand that it's two and two. Two long strings should be Tosis, three tall strings should be lower. How do you pass the halacha of Meisim? So the Vilna Goyim is quoted as having said, what Rashi and Tosis say he thinks is absolutely not correct. He doesn't know whether to pass them like the Rambam or like the Rambam. If it's one long string or one half a string. But when you look in Shulchan Aruch, it doesn't say like the Vilna Goyim. The only opinion that's quoted is the Rashi and Tosis. That it's two and two, because all the generations that we didn't have tailors, it was always a shayla. What are the two parts of the tzitzis? Are they supposed to be two and two, or are they supposed to be three and one? Are they supposed to be seven and one? So we have been passing all along, and you get to other issues, even if you don't have tailors, it's they get to other being. The psak hamikubal always was that it's two and two. That's why the Pashtus says that for so many years we've been following that Shita. So when you have Chedus, it should again be two and two. One of the great poskim years ago, quoted by the Mishnah Berurah, is the Malbim. We know the Malbim, he wrote a lot of Halach. But the Malbim was younger, he was one of the major poskim of the generation. Then the story goes that when he wrote a Sefer Arts in Sahai, it goes to the Hilchos Tzitzis. I think it goes to the Hilchos part of Hilchos Tzitzis. I don't remember already. So the Mishnah Berurah quotes it every so often. So then he went to the Chassam Sefer, went to Pressburg to get a haskara from the Chassam Sefer, who was much older than him. So the story goes that he was sitting next to the Rav the whole Shabbos, and on Motzoi Shabbos it was dark in the shul, and by mistake, when he sat down to Dav Meir before they were about to Dav Meir, by mistake he sat down in the Rav's chair, because it was dark in the shul, he couldn't see anything. So one of the Balabatim came over and he said to him in German, "Young man, you're sitting in the rabbi's seat." So he was a little absent-minded. He was dazed and didn't realize what they told him. They were sitting there. So that some sefer came and he saw what happened. So he said in German, "Let him stay there. Let him remain there. It's okay." So when he realized what happened, he took it as if that some sefer had given him a curse, that he shouldn't advance in learning anymore. He should stay on the same level that he was on. So from that time on, he wrote on Tanakh. Until then, he was working in halacha. He was considered the model, was considered one of the major posts of the generation. This is the story that's how the way he's doing. So the Mishnah Berurah quotes from the Malbim also. He also has a psak halacha, but we assume it's 2 and 2. Because all the years we've been assuming it's 2 and 2, but he gave the other year. Parshas Korach tells us that the rebellion that Moshe Rabbeinu, that Korach led against Moshe Rabbeinu, in Parshas Shlach ends off with Korach, with tzitzis. So the Midrashim assume that there's a connection between the end of Shlach and the beginning of Korach. So Rashi quotes from the Midrash, the famous comment, that Korach wanted to do away with the tzitzis. He said, if you have a house that you use for secular purposes, and you put one mezuzah on the door, that's enough, that's good enough. So if you have a bais mali svarim, you have a house full of svarim, so you certainly don't need a mezuzah. If you have a house full of secular things, you put one little mezuzah, that's enough. You have sefer Torah, you have other things, other svarim. So you certainly shouldn't need a mezuzah. That was one argument that he had. Then he had another argument, what if you have a beged? The whole beged is made from chelas. So if you have a beged, a different color beged, if you put one through chelas, yotzei, that's enough. If the whole beged is made of chelas, then you shouldn't need any chelas at all. This is the argument. What did he have against the chelas? Why was he so interested in doing away with the chelas? So Leitchi gave the famous drasha. So Leitchi was once in Eretz Yisrael in 1935. He was a candidate for the Rabbanus in Tel Aviv. And it was this season of the year. He was there for Shavuos. He was there after Shavuos a little bit. That was when Rav Kook passed away. He visited Rav Kook in the hospital when he was on his deathbed. Rav Kook passed away Gimel Elul, 1935. So he visited Rav Kook when he was on his deathbed in the hospital. So one of the drushes that he said over in America over the years, he repeated it. He said that he delivered this drush in Eretz Yisrael. He said that Korach was arguing with Moshe Rabbeinu, Kol Eilu Kulu Kedoshim, everybody, Rashi quotes, everybody stood in Hasina. Everybody heard Anoch Hashem Alakech. Everybody saw Man Hasina. So each person should be able to paskin on his own. We don't need a record. We don't need Moshe Rabbeinu to paskin for us. It should be every man's religion. Every Jewish person who stood in Hasina should have the right to paskin the way he sees it. So they should explain, based on a little bit, based on Rabbi Simpson, for her, she's not a smart. That the chelas and the lavan represent different things in life. Lavan usually represents the things that are very clear, very obvious, and things that we understand. The Ravid often disagrees with the Rambam, and every so often he has a hasok, he says, Allah Aloshim, lo mechuvar, it's not white, means that it's not clear, he doesn't agree. The Rambam made a mistake. When the Chumash says, the force of hasimba le'eni haskenim, and the parsha motzi shemra, so the Gemara says in Ksuvus, but before it's a similar dvar mechuvar and kisimla. In the days of Tanakh, most of the dresses didn't have any color. It was very expensive to make dresses for the color. Most of the dresses were white. And that's why it says before it's a similar dvar mechuvar. It was clear and white, white like a simla. So the lavan in the chutei atzitzis represent the things in halacha, the things in life that are very clear and obvious. And the chelas is done when Kisei HaKavod, something we don't know anything about. That represents the things that we don't understand. So chelas gives us the idea that there are areas in halacha that we need a rebbe. Everybody needs a rebbe. Even if you stood a hasidah, call it like a kulam kadoshim, kulam on the bar sinai, but still everybody needs a rebbe. And even if the rebbe is no longer alive, you have to honestly try to figure out what would your rebbe have paskin in this situation. You shouldn't paskin on your own. You should always have traditions from your rebbe and only on. A lot of people are wise guys, they say, a lot of people learn by Rabbi Soloveitchik. That's the people that I've understood. Rabbi Soloveitchik would have been alive, he would have said X, Y, Z. That's what they think. They never understood the Shia. I used to mock the believers. These guys, I was very free. I gave hundreds when the guy understood. There was one student who got at eight. Eight on top of the pile. Because the beginners were arranged alphabetically. So the top one started with an eight. So Rabbi Soloveitchik said 8 out of 10. So he said, no, 8 out of 100. Then he said, did anybody get 100? A lot of boys got 100. This guy didn't know anything. He didn't point to Rabbi Soloveitchik's favorites. Because his father learned by Rabbi Soloveitchik when he first gave Shia. When Rabbi Soloveitchik passed away, that boy's father was one of his first students. So he liked his student before he even came to his class. Yeah, a lot of people, they don't know what Rabbi Soloveitchik said. They don't know what he would have said. They don't know what he did say. They don't know what he would have said. They don't know what he said. It's a joke. No, but a person has to realize that there's things of love. There's some things that we understand, some things we don't understand. Everybody has to have a rebbe. The summer program should be b'hatzlocha meruga. You have to learn halacha, you have to learn gemara, you have to be ma'ale seder every week, you have to learn tanach, you have to learn mishnah. You have an obligation to learn kol ha-torah kula. People ask, Baal HaTanya asks, how is that possible to learn kol ha-torah kula? The gemara quotes the pasuk in Erev, the gemara quotes the pasuk. Arucha me'eretz midah, rechav me'niyam, the Torah is so vast. If it's so vast, it's impossible for anybody to mess their Kol HaTorah Kula. So the Baal HaTanya writes in Hilchos Talmud Torah, Arucha me'eretz midah, rechav me'niyam, those are the only Kavonos HaTorah. Just on the text of Kol HaTorah Kula, it's not Arucha me'eretz midah. It's not so many Svarim. The 24 Svarim of Tanakh. And then Mishnayos, Tosefta, Talmud Bavli, Yerushalmi, he says this constitutes Kol HaTorah Kula. The Rashba and the Tzai Sachayshen and everything else, that's already Oyve Kavonis on Yarni. That's a Rucha Me'eretz Midah. Everyone has to try. You have a whole life clock. You have to finish it before September. You have many years ahead. So you have to try to plan ahead to cover Kol HaTorah Kula. Kol HaTorah Kula surprisingly includes Tanakh as well. People don't believe. A lot of people learn the yeshivas in America. They're so used to hearing Baruch Ber, Shiva Shrap, and Tavi Trap, and all the svarim. So when they leave the yeshiva, they think if you learn Gemara with Rashi, without Tosis, you learn Gemara with Tosis, without all that writing, that's not called learning. Of course it's called learning. Learning Tanakh is learning. The basis of everything is Tanakh. Hashkafa is all based on Tanakh. Everything the Gemara says is based on Tanakh. You have to try to have a plan to figure out how we're going to cover Kol HaTorah Kula during our lifetime. You have a Me'eretz Midah, you have to rush everything now. You should continue to have Hatzlocha, you plan to have many speakers over the summer. Everything should be Hatzlocha Meruba. Shalom Aruch. Okay, so now we're going to have a session.
Questions and answers. The first question someone asked already is, in terms of the OU's policy, how come the OU doesn't require, insist, to recommend that the beracha be written on the packaging of certain foods? If Rebbe has an opinion on that.
Some kashrus organizations write what bracha. The OU has, I think, on their website. They'll write what brachas on certain foods that are questionable. It's a question if you can throw the label in the garbage. If you write the bracha on this food, it's designed as a shahakal. So maybe that's like the better, maybe not like throw in the garbage. Not everyone is interested in hearing what you have to say about it. Not everybody agrees. There are questions on a lot of the food about property. It's not, I don't think it's so smart to write what property. What should this? Because local that's right. What property I should say. Something has to say on the package. And many years ago, when I visited England, the Rabbanu, the chief rabbi that he gave Hashgachas, there was no symbol at all in any of the packages. You had to have a separate booklet And you have to look at the booklet to see what's covered with the Hashgacha. I think because of anti-Semitism, the companies didn't want, here in America also, that some companies have the OU, but they're afraid of the Arab boycott. So they don't want the OU to appear on the product. So you have to read in the magazines what's covered with the OU. I don't think it's necessary to run. They call up on the phone. So the fellow who answers the hotline will tell you what bracha to say. Or if you look on the website, they tell you what bracha you need to say on these food.
Anyone else wants to ask a question? Now is a good time.
First of all, regarding shilozon that you mentioned, I should tell you that this shilozon happens to be an Arabic or Persian word, which is halazun, same word, and it's not a fish.
And what?
It's not a fish at all.
Huh?
Right. Now, my question is regarding the color of Techelet. Somewhere along Hachamim tell us that it's like yam. Yam is like shamay, and shamay is like sako. So yam is definitely is not dark blue or...
Well, a very good question. I don't know. Rashi points that also. Gemara tells us, Chen is dumb of the yam, the yam dumb of the king, the king is dumb of the king, say, I thought it. So how is that not the color of the sky at midnight? I guess it means color of the ocean at midnight. I think it's dumb. At night, I think it's dumb. I don't know. The question is better than the answer.
Can we ask also different questions?
Sure.
You mentioned about Khadisa. Now, the question is, there is one that Yahid in Gemara, which is Abba Shaul, which says, don't do Ibum, do only Khadisa. But we look in the Gemara pages after pages, all the other Tanaim, they talk about Ibum, and Gemara says, first Ibum, if not Ibum, then Khadisa. So my question is, why Ramah rejects the by Ramah goes by Abba Shaul and rejects the Ibum at all?
That's a historical question. The Gemara says that at different times the consensus of the Chachamim shifted. At one time, in the early generations, nobody had about Abba Shaul. Abba Shaul came up with this idea that we don't permit Yibum unless he's doing it in Shema. So then there was a period of time that the reverse kicks up in the Paschalachim. So then the question is, how many times did they go back and forth? Over the years, during my lifetime, I'm only 80 years old. During my lifetime, the consensus shifted on certain halachas. Because Abayla said certain din. In the early years, before the war and after the war, the psak was one way. And then after years went by, the psak changed by the big time of the Chacham. The consensus changed. So the Gemara says here, with respect to whether mitzvahs chalitza kodemus or mitzvahs even kodemus, the Gemara says the consensus shifted. But there's a historical model, and how many times did it shift back and forth? So the Bali Atesis were of the opinion that the final maskana historically was that the consensus was like Abba Shaul. And the Chach Misvaret say it's not true. It doesn't say that in the Gemara. Chach Misvaret felt that the Psak Halacha was against Abba Shaul. At one period of time, they passed the right Abba Shaul. Then they reversed the Psak, and we don't know about Abishai. They never went back to Pascal and Abishai. It's a historical machlokes. It's how many times did the Psak shift? When they established the Medina Yisrael in 1948, and they established the Rabbanut, so the Rabbanut was going to have a problem. By the Sfardim, they recommend Yibum. And Ashkenazi, they insist we don't let anybody believe, everybody has to do Chalitza. So depending on who the Bethlehem is going to be, they're going to give a different Psak. So the Ashkenazim pressured the Sfardish Rabbanim, the sign of Heskeim, that no one's going to allow Yibam anymore. Everyone's going to insist on Chavitz. And then at Chacham Avadi, at that time, was not in the Rabbanut. So he, I think he was in Egypt at that time or something. So he wrote a tshuva that the Sfardi Rabbanim had no right to sign such a Heskeim. It's against Allah, and they're agreeing to follow Ashkenazi Psak. Has no token, has no validity. And they have to pass it for the Sfardim, like the Sfardim ships out, that they should do Yibum, shouldn't do Chalitza, should do Yibum. But the Maisa, in Eretzel, most of the Batidim will not allow you to do Yibum.
Anyone else?
it's very important for everyone to have a post-sec that they go to. What if there's a situation where someone essentially knows what their post-sec is going to say, and they would want to, you know, another, let's say something like Tehillim. Is it appropriate to go to another post-sec that's not the post-sec you normally go to get an answer that you hypothetically want?
You're not supposed to shop around for a psak. Some people are always looking for a kula. Some people are always looking for a chora. That's not right. The Gemara says, you're from the Neshama, you have to follow the Rebbe's psak. You have to follow the Neshama. If you're from the Neshama, you have to follow the Neshama. If you need the Talmud of Neshama, you know, then you follow the Majari opinion. The Majari knows the Neshama. But those who tell me about the Shama, also the Shama keep the Rebbe. You have to follow the Rebbe's psak. The main thing is that a person who has a Shaila has to follow whatever his Rebbe will accept. Unless he himself is a Chacham Shehigia Lo Hayro, then he's entitled to disagree. He has a right to disagree with his Rebbe. But that's a difficult decision for a person to make. But I feel I'm so smart. I'm a Chacham Shehigia Lo Hayro. Over the generations, we had, ours is not the first generation. Over the generations, from the days of the Rishonim, there were many learned people who thought that they were God's gift to humanity, and they thought that they're entitled to write Sifrei Tshuvos, and now they're printing all these Kitzviyot. They're utterly ridiculous. They didn't know how to read Gemara. They didn't know Pirush HaMilos and Gemara. They're printing all these Kitzviyot. They're utterly ridiculous. So, unfortunately, that's a difficult decision for a person to make. I feel I'm entitled to disagree with my Rebbe. I'm a Chacham Shehigia. But that's the cloud. When one is a Chacham Shehigia, right, then he's entitled to have his own opinion. If you have more than one Rebbe, the Gemara says you follow the consensus. You follow the right of your Rebbe. So usually, let's say, Ashkenazim and Sfaradim, they probably each have around 400 Rabbanim of Chacham. They have Rashi and the Rabbi and the Tam, and the Ri, and the Rashbam, and the Rambam, and the Rashbo, and the Ran, and the Rosh. We have 200 approximately, we say. Ashkenazim and Sfaradim. Then the Sfaradim have another 200 that we never heard of. And Ashkenazim have 200 that the Sfaradim never heard of. We have the Chayyotam and the Vilnegro and the Sfaradim have no Shaitas in them. So that's why it's always tilted by the Sfaradim. The majority of their Rabbanim of Hakim have Sfaradim Psak. And by the Ashkenazim, we follow the right Abor Rabbeim of Hakim. So the right is going to be Ashkenazi Psak. Because each group has approximately, let's say, 400 Rabbanim of Hakim. And the right by the Ashkenazim is going to be Ashkenazi Psak. That's not right to go fish around to get a different. If you have one Rebbe Mubik, you follow all the Pesach of Rebbe Mubik. Unless the person really feels that it's a Chacham Shehigia Lo Hayro, which is hard to, not so easy to attain that status.
Another question. Is having
God's
own people a technology, when you go to their house, let's say for Shabbat, when you open the door, it will say front door open, or like you pass by their house, of course, to enter, let's say you're a guest, the light will turn on. So the question is, are you allowed to visit these people on Shabbat?
Are you allowed to visit them on Shabbat?
Yeah, like one of the meals, like, you know, you have the light going on, the house will make an announcement, like the door is open, or like there will be detection, let's say screening,
yeah.
Stuff like that.
The Gemara has a din of Dovash and Miskave is a Machlok in Satanoim, the Chiller of Yudet by Shabbos and by Kola Kurtu. Dovash and Miskave is like this. I'm doing one act, and I know in advance that this may or may not lead to a different thing, which is also, I'm doing a Pula Hamoteris, which may or may not result in a Pula Hasura. So we pass from Allah, Dovash and Miskave is Mutter. What if I'm doing an act that the Vadai will cause a malacha to come. No, by walking over here, the light will turn on. So that's a psikration. So Taisus quotes a machloikis with the Aruch. The Aruch was wrote a dictionary. The Aruch was a contemporary of Rashi. He lived in Rome. So the Aruch has a chiddush that you have a psikration, the lenichalai, the lech this way. By doing this action, it vadai will cause a malacha to come. I couldn't care less about the malacha. I don't need the malacha to occur. If I'm walking in the street, so the light will go on. I don't need the light. There's enough light without that light going on. The Aruch is of the opinion that a psikration will only have to go on. It's permissible. Taisis disagrees with the other. They think that's not true. Segregation lo nichalei should be a malacha sheitzmiuk on the gufa. It turns it into an isa de rabbon, but it's still going to be forbidden with the rabbon. So the Ran is of the opinion that this situation, when you walk in the street and the lights go on, you're not really interested. He considers that a segregation lo nichalei. And we usually avoid doing segregation on the Yitzhak because it's a dispute between Taisus and the Aura. So it's a stake in the Din when it's also in the Rabban and Amut and the Gama. So the Rashba has a Chiddush. The Rashba has a very Awak Rabba Chiddush. So he has a big Chiddush and a small Chiddush. So he has the following. There's a Mishnah Masech HaShabbos that talks about trapping an animal. Let's say a wild animal runs into my house. And I want to trap the animal, I want to catch it. So I close the door. All the windows are closed, I close the door. Even though I didn't touch the animal, I didn't trap the animal in a net. But the animal can't run out of the house now. So if that's what I'm interested in, even though I did the malacha say that by closing the windows and closing the door, that's a malacha gur. By closing the windows, closing the door, the animal gets trapped, that's safe. So the Rashba has two chidushim. He says, what if the person is locking the door and he couldn't care less about trapping the animal? He's locking the door in order to protect. Whenever he goes to shul, he locks the door. He goes to shul in the morning. He doesn't want the guy him to walk off with his furniture, with his valuables in the house. So he's really interested in protecting his apartment. He's not interested in trapping the animal. So the Rashba says that that's mutter. And it's not an issue of segregation of the animal. It's more kal than that. Then the Rashba goes further and he says, and even if you are interested in trapping the animal, if your main interest really is in protecting your house, and that's only a secondary interest, I may as well trap the animal too. I'll be happy, I'll use the animal as a pet. I'll keep them in the house. So that's a secondary interest, but that's also permissible. Since your main interest is to protect your belongings, it's only secondary interest, and you're not doing the same that you're dying on the animal, you're locking the door. So the locking the door relates to the valuables that you have in the house, you want to protect them. Since you're not really interested, since it's only a secondary interest, main interest is not to trap the animal, so that's permissible. So the Ran quotes this Rush, and I said, that's utterly ridiculous. He locks the door with two intentions. The main intention is to protect his belongings. The secondary intention is to trap the animal. And that's mutter. He said, that's a malacha d'oraisa. He has that in mind. How can the Rashba say that that's mutter? So the Pasuk say, we pass along the Ran. We don't accept that Rashba so far. He goes so far to say, even though you're intending to trap the animal, it's still mutter. That's not a malacha d'oraisa. I don't know how this got me. But the first Rashba, what the Rashba said, if you're locking the door to protect your belongings, and you're not interested at all in trapping the animal, but you know it's a segregation, so many Achronim say, they think we can pass the lock to Rashba, that this is more cow than segregation of Lanichala. The Ran argues that you're not allowed to do that, that's segregation of Lanichala. I know that by locking the door, the animal will get trapped, even I'm not interested in it, so the Orachot and Smutim, so the Achronim say they think we can pass the Yeshua's Yankiv and the Abenezer and a few other Achronim. They all say they think you can be made like the Rashba because segregation of the Nichalei means I'm doing the action itself. I'm doing the malacha here. I'm walking in the street, minding my own business, but because there are ultraviolet beings bouncing on me and bouncing on some other thing there, this is causing the light to go on. But I'm not doing anything the other time. I'm minding my own business over here. So over here, I'm locking the door, and the door relates, I'm locking the door with one intention, to protect my belongings. It just happens that there's a wild animal got caught over there, but I didn't do any pulling with the animal. So the locking of the door doesn't relate to the animal if I'm not interested at all. That's better than segregation of one. So that's what many persons say. And that's why whenever you go to the person of Marabi, you're always being videoed. So for security purposes. So So you can look. You can look 7 hours before Shabbos in Eretz Yisrael, 7 hours before New York. So if your children are your relatives are in Eretz Yisrael, they're davening by the Kaddish Olam Aravi. So if you look 7 hours before in America, you can see your relatives by the Kaddish Olam Aravi davening. So if they know that you're watching and they wait for you, a good Shabbos, then they're violating Sefer. Because the Malach HaKsiva is not only if you write words, if you draw a picture, or if you make, or if you have your face appear on the screen in New York. If a person looks at a mirror and he sees his reflection, that's not called Ksiva. That's just a reflection. If it would be dark in the room, you wouldn't see it as a reflection. But this is not a reflection. A person is an Eretz Yisrael, he appears, his face appears on the screen in America. That's called Ksiva. That's not a reflection. So it's not Shashon Kayama. It's only Ksiva in the Rabbah. So if a person is named by the Kaddish Olam Aravi and he knows that the parents are watching in New York and he waves to them, then it's a violation of Ksiva. But if he minds his own business, he's going to the Kaddish Olam and he's davening and he's going and he's leaving. And he's not involved. He's not interested in the fact that they're taking a video. So when they first put up these video cameras for security purposes, so if you Rabbanim stop going to the Kaddish Olam on Shabbos because of the secretion of Amichai. And then they wrote Shulis and they quoted all of the Achronim who said this whole Cheshire. That Abinezer and the Shulis Yankee before him and others, they all say they think we can pass the light to Rashboa, that this is more cow than secretion of Amichai. Here, even Tosis would agree with the Aura that it should be moved. So that's what it's based on. According, you should really avoid it. Let's say you can easily avoid walking on that side of the street where you know the lights will go on. So you should avoid it. If you can avoid it, you should, because the Ran holds a secretion of Amicha. So you shouldn't do it. But if it's too difficult to avoid it, or I'm visited by that other person, so you can't avoid it. You can't avoid it, so strictly speaking, then it's mukhi, because it's more calm than the secretion of Amicha. Here in New York, that's how they catch all the ganavim. Wherever you walk in the street, you're being videoed. There are video cameras all over the place. So you can't walk in the street on Shabbos. So, according to the Ram, he can't walk in the street on Shabbos. Because it's a situation of Ani Chalat. You know, you're being videoed and you're violating Ksivim. It's not Sapshal Kayama, but you're violating Ksivim with Rabban. But just like we walk in the streets, and we're not worried about the fact that we're being videoed. The same over here, we're not worried about the fact that the lights go on and so on. It's better, it's more calm than the situation of Ani Chalat.
Refrigerator light.
Shlomo Zalman Auerbach was of the opinion that the refrigerator light is not called a secretion below Nikola. He thought that that's a Gabbah, that's Mamish Biyadayim. He thought that's Mamish and Malacha Biyadayim. Because we know that by opening the door, the button's going to come out and the light's going to go on. I think Rav Moshe Feinstein assumed, most in America assumed, that it's a secretion of Lo Nichalei, and it's a machloikis, so you should, that's why they all recommend it, because it's a machloikis, you should unscrew the bulb permanently, or at least unscrew the bulb every Erev Shabbos. But if you forgot, then they say, if you have big shots at chak and you can't get any food from anybody else, the only way to get food is by opening the door. So you have to, sometimes if you have a big shots at chak, or make a lot of secretion of Lo Nichalei. So then she said, if you really get stuck, you should close your eyes and open the door and not look at all. You should take everything with your eyes closed. That would be a secretion of Lo Nichalei. Or ask a non-Jew to open the door. Amirul Anach is only Oscar if you ask an outright to do a malachah. But if you ask him to do a secretion, I ask him, let's say, to take the pot of hot food from off of the coals. So if he won't be careful, he's going to take it off quickly. There'll be Mechata B'Yoholem, which is a Malacha, Mechata and Mavir, two Malachas. But I didn't ask him to be Mechata. I told him, theoretically, it would have been possible to take off the pot in such a way, not to cause Mechata B'Yoholem. He chose to do it like that, so I never asked him to do that. There was no Tzibur HaYisot. I didn't ask him to do the Malacha. So whenever you have a Malacha that's forbidden because of secretion, so we say that Amir with a Nochri would be Mutter. They asked the Nochri to open the refrigerator door, we would be Makel, Because also the Torah is only a psikresha of the malach. It's not an actual. Not, I never asked the guy to do the malach. But it's not right. There's a certain rabbi in New Jersey who learned by Rabbi Soloveitchik, and he picked up all the quirks of Rabbi Soloveitchik, all the kulis. All the cool Rabbi Soloveitchik had more kulis than he had kulis. So this character, not Soloveitchik, he thinks he's God's gift to the world. So he told his Balabatins they don't have to unscrew the bowl, because Rabbi Soloveitchik said that secretion of the Nihale is mutter. So first of all, that's not true. Rabbi Soloveitchik never said that. He said that Rabbi Chaim learned Shat and the Raman, that the Raman thinks that likely our secretion of Nihale is mutter. Didn't say that's the deal. He said if he really gets stuck, then that classical post-manetal to the violent situation on the other. But, so a certain Balabas called me up on the phone. He said he can't visit his children. They live in that community. And the children don't turn off the bulb on Shabbos in the refrigerator. And his children are opening and closing the door of the refrigerator all day long and they're violating the Chabal Mabar all day long. He said he can't visit his children on Shabbos. His children are Mechal Shabbos because of their rabbi. I think the rabbi just retired. So maybe the new rabbi will straighten out the halakha.
Okay, we have time for one. Time for two more questions here and there. So the Ramah brings down in, I think it's Kuf Lamed Tet, about what name you get called up to in the Torah. And I believe it's the halakha, is that if you're if you don't know who the father is, if you're an Asufi or a Shuki, that you call up a B'Shem Avi Imo in the maternal grandfather's name. What if the person is, or what if the person's mother is a Mas Kohen, and the maternal grandfather is therefore a Kohen? Would you still say Ploni Ben Ploni HaKohen, and then?
Strictly speaking, the word HaKohen is not part of the name of the person. In the days of the Tanaim, when they would write a shtar, they wouldn't write HaKohen HaLevi. Right, plenty, but plenty. If there are two people with the same name, Yosef and Shimon, and one is the Kohen and one is not. So you have to know which person you're talking about. I said, then they write HaKohen. But otherwise, they wouldn't write HaKohen. Today, the common practice is that Kohen and HaLevi is part of the name itself. But you can say plenty, then the grandfather's name, you don't have to say HaKohen or HaLevi. It sounds funny, but you get a shlishi if you say that. You send them from the Kohen, you have to say it's the mother's father's name. Probably will not say that for you.
Jacob? Jacob?
Welcome, Shah.
Sorry. So the Moshe's have a strict camera over on Shabbat, so Mancha and what's up. What if the strict camera has a microphone on it? Is that a difference?
You're speaking too quickly. I'm an old man.
Moshe's have a security camera over Shabbat.
Okay.
According to the word seek, right? So are these security cameras allowed to have a microphone on it? Recorded at the same time, or is the audio a second problem with the video?
They have an audio?
Some cameras have audio attached.
For what purpose?
Just to record, to have
second
hand sound.
The God speaks, they want to take that. My yeshiva
has security cameras, and they said, just with audio attached. I asked Rabbi why, he said, it's a cheaper option. The cameras that come with a microphone are cheaper. So is that a separate problem than just having a visual
only
camera?
Is that a separate problem? Yeah. It's another malacha. I assume there's a malacha of ksiva by having your image and video. There's a malacha of having your words recorded. That's the question, what is the malacha? Let's say to make a tape, to make a record, this is why they didn't have tapes to make a record. So what is the malacha then? They go out to making a record. So when they see it soft, I think the first one is going to be a schmuckers in 1850, when they first started making records. So he says that it's ksivim in the Rabban. Avshalom Zalman Auerbach quotes this in one of his songs. He says, why did he say ksivim in the Rabban? So you should have said that it's Machaba Patrish Darais. I used to have a record that didn't do anything. But play it, nothing will come out. Now it gives me a song and a dance. Did the whole lecture. I played the record and it gives a whole lecture. So sometimes I thought that maybe making a tape and making a record, recording a speech should be a Malacha, Machaba Patrish. you make the tape able to tell you some message. And we assume there's some kind of an ISA. Yeah. You're having a double ISA. An ISA around having an image appear. An ISA around having the words appear.
One last question, Remy, sorry.
Yes.
Thank you very much for coming. Thanks for all of us to have you here. My question is about the policy of the OU. Is the OU's policy that that Yashan doesn't apply to Tzal Arts? And is that why the OU doesn't have a Hashgacha for Yashan?
They have a few items that are Yashan, so they'll have a big letters that this is Yashan. Have a big letters. The policy is because in Europe, the overwhelming majority of the Jews were not careful about Yashan. So the Modern Avraham, in Hilchos Pesach, when they talk about Chodesh and Yashan, so he quotes the justification that is based on the Sefer HaTruma. Sefer HaTruma paskin that Chodesh B'chutz L'Arts only the Rabbanan, and the Gzeru was only made by Ratzis HaSmuchas L'Arts Yisrael. By Ratzis HaRachakis, the Gzeru was never made. And that's what Or Hashulchan writes the same in Yeriday, in Hilchus Chodesh, that he discovered America. Well, then Abraham, and Hilchus Pesach quotes it already. I don't know what Or Hashulchan got so excited, is if he discovered the same truth. That's what most of the Jews in Europe relied on. The big Talmid Chacham, big Tzadik, the Shakasari was Yadua, that whenever he would travel, he would take his own pots and pans, he would be careful about Chodesh. But many of the Gdolim, they were only careful about Chodesh in their own hometown. When they went out of town, they knew they wouldn't be able to. So they would not be careful. They would be lying.
Is it possible now? Shouldn't we take a stricter approach to it? Because it's not as hard.
Today it's easier to observe Chodesh. Yeah.
Do you see the OU's policy changing at any point?
Sure.
What would it take?
More people sending letters to the OU.
I remember you giving that answer 7 to 8 years ago when you were here, but now more people are keeping the
so more people should send emails and letters, and then they'll see that there's a bigger demand. If there's a demand, then they'll give the supply. Yeah.
Thank you, Rebbe.
Thank you, Rebbe.
We're going to start our meeting in 2 minutes.